fishing with him for me. It would be a nice declaration. Okay? The floor is yours.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Shatrak Kung. I'm a member of the State Down Trader Board. I'm representing the chairperson, Mr. Castell, who unfortunately could not make it to this meeting. The delegation of the State Down Trader comprises of the Chief Executive Officer, Mefuti Sigalala Mvelase, and then Menobuke Sibeko, Legal Officer, as well as Mempumi Danisa, the Chief Financial Officer. This ladies' choir. We present to you the State Diamond Trader report as expected by the committee. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you so much. And I think that before I start with the presentation of the State Diamond Trader, which we're going to share with the Chief Financial Officer, I do want to wear my other hat, that of the member of the board of the regulator, seeing as we're now going to be presenting together somehow, that there is an apology on behalf of the chairperson of the board who could not be here today with us, Mr. Steve Peary. He could not come today because of other pressing things in the platinum sector where he is. I think that I'm, with due respect, I'm just disturbed because the chair is not there and I'm looking all... Thank you. Well, thank you very much. For a start, the chairperson, in the morning when I saw the agenda, I thought being number three meant that our status has grown because we normally are the last ones all the time. So I was quite happy, and then I think you spoiled it, chairperson, with due respect. Before lunch, you said I must present at the same time as the regulator. So I failed. I'm still presenting first. Thank you very much for the opportunity to tell you about our work for the financial year 2015-2016. Unfortunately, therefore, because of the technology here in the mother city or maybe in Parliament, things are not working out well on the screen. But I'm going to request honorable members to just go through the presentation with me. I'm going to try as well, Chairperson, not to dwell on every word that's written down, but just to indicate maybe some of the important features. Just to say that the first slide, we have our mandate, just to remind members and ourselves what we're set up to do as a State Diamond Trader in terms of the Act. And the second one is that of our vision. These are important messages for us on a daily basis that we need to be guided by, and we are guided by them, as well as our mission, which really talks to many of the things that we do in terms of growing or promoting the growth of our industry in this country. Our strategic objectives, we have got three strategic objectives. The first one, contributing to the growth of the industry, up to the third one. The second one, developing efficient means to market diamonds most suitable for local beneficiation, as well as the one talking about the development of people as well as attempts to make money in this planet. Our strategic outcomes, we have four of these, and all of them are really geared towards ensuring the growth and the future, you know, new trajectory for this industry as we try to find solutions to the challenges that we're facing as the industry, not just the state diamond trader. And these strategic objectives and outcomes on the next slide are aligned to the national outcomes and as well as the DMR outcomes. I do want to say that, Chairperson, there was a question raised around us not being specific around, you know, what we do on, you know, to implement the national development program goals and activities, and I think that it's an omission, something that we just need to make sure next time when we report that we indicate where exactly it is that we are aligning with the NDP goals. To just take us through to now the something that affects our core business, which is the market performance 2015-16. I do want to say that 2015, the whole calendar year, actually from the middle of 2014, the diamond industry was under severe strain, and that will be reflected. It has been reflected really in our financial performance, and it was really a bad year for the industry. But despite that, we saw some glimmers of hope at the beginning of this year, which was for the final quarter of this current of the financial year, and we're able to do a bit more of trading at that time. But as we feel the pinch, obviously the local industry, you know, particularly the beneficiating one, was under severe strain itself. Because this is the sector of the pipeline which has really small profit margins, just like the state diamond trader, and so it was a bit of a blow for all of us. Despite this, and I guess because of it, we're not able to meet our targets because of this. We're not able to meet our revenue targets as well as our purchasing targets, and that those went down by 18% and 20% respectively. But we still are happy that we were able to make the 460 million that we did, which the CFO is going to talk about, despite those really challenging trading conditions that we faced. I'll then get on to our performance highlights. This is how we've structured the presentation, just to talk about what we've done, which is all based on our annual performance plan and the targets as well as the achievements that we managed to do to get through this that year. I would have loved to show you that slide in color so you can see not only the fact that we had our inaugural diamond endeavor last year, which was really championed and by the state diamond trader, and was the idea of the state diamond trader, but we really are grateful to the department, the ministry, as well as the regulator, the diamond and precious metals regulator, for working with us on this, and we think it was a success. We were able to bring together industry stakeholders, and as you can see there, we still have a long way to go. If you see that panel sitting there, it's practically all male, and we just need you know, to do more, to bring more transformation into the sector. We've continued with the work of promoting the industry post this inaugural dam on Indaba, which led us to our second dam on Indaba, which has already taken place, but obviously this is for this current financial year. And that helped us engage further with the industry stakeholders throughout the year in various committees and platforms, just to ensure that we don't end up with a second Indaba that's a talk shop, much more than addressing the issues that need to be addressed. And we decided that some of the outcomes of the Indaba would therefore be shared with South Africans through social media, which we started using, and indeed I also participate in that space. This is also to help us with young people who are always on social media to, you know, see what is possible within the diamond space, but also just for us, you know, to get them eventually to be the market that we want them to be. One of the other achievements from the inaugural Diamond Indaba was that we launched the Young Diamond Beneficiators Guild, and these are young people, fairly young, I think they are still the right age, and we've done quite a lot with them. Yes, Chair, thank you. We have also taken them to the world stage, you know, and just to make sure that we tell our story to the world of diamonds, that we've got young black people as well, because they hold the key to the, you know, continent's future, if I might say so, because I think that some of you honorable members who would read about diamonds in Africa would probably see black people just digging and digging and digging sites and not holding their own as business people within the diamond sector. So we really are happy that the guild is now operating, and they've done quite a lot of work in the international space in terms of networking and in terms of just telling our stories as South Africa. We also continued to host the National Pavilion, supported financially by the DTI mainly, but also our funds went to go into this. And we thereby managed to get 20 companies to participate and benefit from this world stage, which is the Hong Kong show. And that was the third time we went, you know, for this, you know, report. And we've continued with this work together with the DTI and other stakeholders that are supporting us on this, particularly the Department of Mineral Resources. We've also partnered with the Jewelry Council because the jewelers are really the markets for our clients. In looking at the premier jewelry show, South Africa Jewelers, and we thought that this show was not reflecting what was going on, what is going on in our country in terms of beneficiation, in terms of, you know, manufacturing of jewelry and cutting and polishing. And so in doing so, we started then, we sold them the idea of a diamond pavilion within Jewelex, and they were happy to accept that, and so the first one was last year at Jewelex last year, and we continue with that work with the Jewelry Council. This provides a platform for our clients as well. We've also been promoting diamonds and the industry in various provinces. We've actually gone to five, including Gauteng, and in order to make sure that young people and the local people in those provinces understand about diamonds and the opportunities that could be available for them. in order for us to assess the benefits of sending our people, our clients and other beneficiaries to the likes of Hong Kong and other areas, we decided that there has to be some assessment. And so we came up with our own benchmarking tool. That's what we call it. You know, this is where you were when you started going out. Have you been growing as a company? Those are the questions that we're asking, among many other questions. And so we got it finalized earlier this year before the end of the financial year. And so now we've begun to use this benchmarking tool. One of the important projects as well that we are doing is that of training young people. By the end of the financial year, we had 8 young people in training. And these are young people who are aspirant entrepreneurs in our space. And this we did through partnerships again, and this partnership was with the MQA, which was able to give us some of the funding, as well as industry partners, you know, that are running their own factories who agreed to take these young people and train them on, you know, in their factories, as you know, based on MOUs with the State Diamond Trader. And I must say that we now have 18 of these young people, and our target is that, you know, at least 75% of them eventually get into the business as entrepreneurs. That would be a success factor that we're looking, that we are planning and hoping for. We launched this project at the second Diamond Indaba this year, and it's just exciting to see these young people getting to their own in terms of diamond knowledge, as well as the business that they are in. There's a lot into this project, but we still are implementing parts of it because it's still new. This is its second year. The next slide is a summary of our trading performance in our core business. Obviously, even doing research and coming up with interventions to grow this industry is part of our mandate as a state diamond trader, but the core of our business is that of trading. And this slide here is giving a comparison of these 3 financial years in terms of what has been happening, but the focus is obviously on 2015-16. Where we inspected just over 900 diamonds, you know, valued at just over $970 million, and those carats were just over 7.7 million, the carats, and we only bought 3%. Now that's 450 million rands that we actually purchased as a state diamond trader. I think that it's actually important to say here that there is whenever we come across special stones, those are all the beautiful and big ones and blue stones and the color stones of really large sizes. We obviously don't buy these, but they push up the numbers because they're there and they, you know, their numbers are quite high. But as we will all appreciate, these are sold in the globally accepted way of auctioning and then showing them throughout the world because of the special nature of these stones that we still have in this country. There's quite a lot of information, 47 clients there that we sold to. Overall, we made a 3% gross margin, and having bought 3% of what we inspected. The next slide, Chairperson, is just talking to the same issues around what we had budgeted, that 18% and 20% that I spoke about earlier in purchases and sales, which we were not able to meet targets by. The next slides, they're all colorful, Chair, but they are talking about what we've inspected in this country over all these years and comparing that. And I think it's sometimes important just to reflect on this. that prior to, just as we opened our doors late in 2007, this country was producing around 15 million carats of diamonds. At the moment, and for the past few years, it's been, somewhere between 7 and 8 million. So we've gone down almost 50% in terms of production in this country. It's something that we always think about, and when we listen to presentations and talk to scientists such as the Council for Geoscience, we're always excited when they talk about new diamond, discoveries or what they see on the ground, and they're still going to work more on to tell us how much of diamonds are there, etc. Because we cannot lose this opportunity of getting all South Africans into diamonds. They need to know what diamonds are about so we can do away with some of the myths that are that surround diamonds. The next slide is talking to the purchases that we made per producer. And I've explained this before, but maybe just to touch on it a bit, the reason we use the letters of the alphabet is simply that some of these companies are not publicly traded, so they just don't want to then find that their information somehow, without them being public companies, is made public. They need to do it on their own. But these are the companies that we've bought from throughout the year, and we obviously have information on which, on what these, on the names of these companies. The next one is on sales that we did, and comparing that to the other years and the caratage as well, how much caratage was sold and at what values. As you can see, that 460 million there, just over 460 million, as well as the caratage that we managed to buy, which is just over 158,000 carats. In selling, we have segmented our clients in this fashion because each of these segments require, some specific treatment, which is not about selling at discount or anything like that, but just to focus certain focus areas that we have. The growth and transformation, we're focusing on them, and all the clients that are in this segment being 100% HDSA or black companies. And so that is a split in terms of how they've bought and the others as well. The next slide is how black clients or HDSA clients have performed throughout these financial years, and we've seen some growth that when you look at 2012, 2013, they only bought diamonds worth 6.8 million and now they are on 46.1 million. So there is some development and growth that is taking place, and which we are looking at, and we are also contributing towards it as well. And this is just indicating the gross margins that we've been achieving, which is in line really with what the international studies have indicated, that in this sector of the pipeline, diamond pipeline, the margins are like this, because the lion's share of the margins are with the producers as well as the retailers. And so within the pipeline, the margins are quite small, and this is proof of that as well. And the next slide is also a comparison in terms of sales and number of clients that have been buying from us consistently, not once, all the time. They keep on coming back. That therefore, this financial year, 47 clients that actively traded throughout the year to help us get to the revenues that we made, as well as the targets that we that we always made. We've spoken about challenges before, and I think that it's important just to touch a bit on them, just to say that it's not only about us buying maybe run-of-mine, you know, productions and you know, from the producers, while we have to sell only what people want or can cut and polish in this country. But it's also what the industry has been saying, even at the two Indaba meetings that we've had, that maybe our model needs to change. While we are waiting and working on what possibilities could be, these challenges continue to affect us. Even the exchange rate, the rand-dollar exchange rate, is our daily struggle. As you will appreciate that diamonds throughout the world, and even in this country, are inspected and valued in dollars. But in the end, we buy in rands, so it just creates those that exposure to the volatility of the exchange rate. I have mentioned the issue, which is a challenge, but it's also a matter for reflection and therefore for encouraging the work that the Council for Geoscience is doing, the reduced local production of diamonds, which we would love to see going, you know, growing and getting better than what it is today. As a result of there being no funding that is coming from state to the state diamond trader, we therefore continue to be exposed to really expensive funding, which we get from the Industrial Development Corporation. And this funding, I might just add that the interest rates are the normal one when we repay on repayments is prime plus 3%. And when we get to any default state, which luckily we've not gotten to, but it's prime plus 5%. And that wipes away, has the effect of wiping away all our profits, therefore, even at 3%. That's why we have to sell as soon as possible to ensure that we still realize some profit. We do mitigate some of these challenges that we are able to, and we are always alert to what's going on globally around diamonds, and we always try as much as we can to utilize our own financial resources to purchase the smaller production. And we really implement sound administrative controls and internal controls. And we've been able to get an unqualified AG audit as well. Contribute as well to the skilling of the HDSA clients. We've had some workshops and facilitated these, you know, with stakeholders who have come in to train these clients in various areas. This year it was on marketing, and this happened twice, but, you know, all of these clients benefited from that. And we continue to get them to participate in various promotional activities for their own growth, and also to ensure that they have a market that they develop all the time. At this point, Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to give the mic to the CFO, who's going to talk about the financial information.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and members, the accounting officer, and the colleagues at large. I will just take you through to our financial performance for 2015-16 financial year. There's one thing that I saw from the slides from Mintec, which says, if you don't want to sink, you better figure out how to swim. I think that's what we're doing as a state diamond trader. In this financial year, we've actually achieved the revenue for the year of $460,417,568, which reflects an increase of 17% compared to the previous year, that is 2014-15, where we made a revenue of 394 321,101. The increase, it was due to market improvement, particularly during the last quarter. There's nothing that was special that we did, but it was due to market changes. Because what normally happens, the CEO always say that if India sneezes, we all cough. So if there's something wrong, it also affects our revenue. As a result of that, our gross margin percentage, it was 3% that was achieved. Despite achieving that 3% of that gross margin, we actually made a deficit of 3 million, which can be attributable to the stock on hand of 24 million compared to the other years where we had a stock on hand of 20 million. If you look at that, if we managed to sell all our stock, it means we could have made a profit. But due to the market volatility, we actually had that stock on hand. But what I'm glad of, that as to up to date, from that stock on hand, we've actually managed to sell some stock of 10 million. Because the reason why we're holding on stock, we don't want to sell at a loss. We prefer at least to break even, which we are trying. And also the issue of the market subdued and depressed, it also causes us not to be able to sell. But we are trying to make something. And if we look at the administrative expenses for this 2014, 15, 16, it was 20 million. And for the prior year, it was 19 million, which only increased by 4.5% compared to the prior year, which means we are really trying to contain our costs under the stringent conditions. And inventory at hand, which I've indicated, it was 24, and now it's in 2014, 15, it was 20 million. So I've actually explained the reasons to that. The overall financial health of the State Diamond Trader, I would say it's sound, because due to all those circumstances, we still have something in our cash and cash equivalents to be able to run the institution. And our cost of living adjustment for 2014-15, which was paid during the year, reflecting an adjustment of 6.5 in line with other organizations. And in our audit report from the AG, we got an unqualified audit opinion. We didn't get a clean report due to the supply chain finding, which AG regarded it as material qualitatively. Because when you look at the amount that was affected, it was only 75,137. But because of the nature that they assessed it, they said it was irregular, and then irregular is qualitative. The cause of that finding, it was only the fact that on the RFQ, that is request for quotations, we didn't stipulate the criteria that we're going to use for functionality. And then that costed us the clean audit opinion. But we still, as we've indicated on the previous slide, that we've got some mitigating factors that we put into in place to ensure that we actually get our clean audit report.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, for the opportunity, and we are going to find money to do the billboard. We will find some money. And I'll introduce my management team, therefore, Chairperson, led by Acting CEO, Mr. Cecil Khoza. And so I'm going to give it to him. I'm now wearing my other hat.
Now we are tired. Maybe instruction, you are tired. Okay. Don't worry, that's another retiree. Okay. Continue. Because somebody has already said he's wearing another cap. Continue. And introduce your team. You are the one who was introduced.
Thank you, Chair.
How can I declare what I'm food before you give your head over?
I will declare, Chair, when he gets to the financial information, how much I make from that, my declaration. Which declaration, Chairperson?
The one you declared here when you were jealous of Mzulu's gesture and Skosana.
Oh. Okay. Can I just take a second to talk about that one? That declaration is about the gifts that came in from the other institutions, from MinTech and the CGS. We just cannot send you the kind of gifts that we can bring to you, which are shiny, and just come with them to a hall. No, we can't. We've got to deliver them appropriately.
Thank you, Chair. First, I would like to thank the Chair for the opportunity and also to acknowledge the honorable members of the committee, as well as my board member, Ms. Kuti Bidala. With me, the team is comprised of myself, of course, acting since the beginning of September. Oh, okay. Sorry, Chair.
You know, when you
yeah.
act, when you act, maybe it's a point that there is not even an air that comes through. Let people forget about who has left before you. And see no need to look for the next one.
Thank you, Chair. It's not a thing. Thank you. Sorry for the mistake. I'd like to introduce my team. On the left, on the right, I have Mr. Mandazi, who is the financial manager currently. And on the left is Ms. Linda Commission with the GM Corporate Services. And Mr. Mangaliso Babu is the acting GM for regulatory compliance. The only other executive who is not here is Mr. Mlondo, GM Security, here to take care of other issues.
I understand you, Mr.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, the presentation outline, as you see there, I'll just give a brief introduction, and I was informed that the Chair would like to expand more, a little bit more on our mandate, so I'll take you through the mandate. And then I'll talk about the audit outcome for the year financial year 2015-16 and our achievement against our objectives and HR issues. Mr. Mandazi will take us through the financial statement for the year, and then I'll come back and discuss the challenges. And of course, with the team, who will respond to the questions. Now, in terms of our mandate, the regulator's mandate is predominantly to ensure competitiveness, sustainable development and job creation in the diamond and precious metals industry, and to ensure effective transformation of the diamond and precious metals sectors in particular. We also have to ensure equitable access to resources for local beneficiation, as well as ensuring compliance with legislative requirements. Now, how do we do that? I'll just split the two. I'll talk about regulation of the diamonds and also regulation of the precious metals. In terms of regulation of diamonds, we have a licensing division that is responsible for issuing licenses, such as diamond dealers licenses, diamond beneficiation, export permits, and the like. We also have a function called the diamond trade, which is responsible for facilitation of diamond tenders on behalf of diamond producers and diamond licensees. And the very same diamond trade is responsible for the implementation of minimum requirements for the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme that includes your exports and imports of diamonds. And that is done in collaboration with SAFS. We also have a function called the GDV, which is in terms of the Diamonds Act, the government diamond valuator. Their responsibility is to determine the fair market value on rough diamonds. And also in the diamond division, we have a diamond inspectorate, which role is to conduct compliance inspections for new and existing premises, as well as the registration of diamond producers. On the precious metal side, we have various permits, such as your jewelry permits, your refining licenses. And there are inspectors who go out to conduct compliance inspections on new and existing premises, and they monitor the exports and imports of precious metals such as gold and platinum. This is also done in collaboration with SARS to ensure that there's repatriation of money collected. Now, during the financial year 2015-2016, we actually looked at policies and reviewed them and aligned them with the PFMA requirements and the necessary controls, and we managed to implement them correctly. And during that particular year, we managed to receive a clean audit outcome, because if you look back in 2014-2015, we obtained an unqualified audit opinion with some findings that were not so material. Then we made a commitment to work on those findings, and we are pleased to announce that now, because of that hard work, we managed to get that clean audit. We are invited to attend the PFMA Clean Audit Award by the AG. In terms of our annual report for the year, achievements, to ensure equitable access to resources for local beneficiaries, that was one of our main objectives. We had over 2,845 clients visiting the Diamond Exchange and Export Center and placed and bid for the diamond parcels. This was against a target of 3,550, compared to the previous year. So that was a non-achievement. And during the same period, we had 131 diamond beneficiaries visiting the DEC, and they were given priority. We were also able to facilitate 18 polished diamond tenders for small beneficiaries. That was also an achievement. You will note that some of these achievements were issues that were beyond our control owing to economic factors. For instance, you will find that people were not renewing their licenses due to some of the challenges that they had financially. In terms of ensuring compliance with legislative requirements, we had 48 diamond parcels that were offered and presented for valuation, and all of them were evaluated for fair market value. We were also able to conduct 1,478 inspections within both the diamonds and precious metals industry. And our target was 1,444. In terms of ensuring competitiveness, sustainable development, and job creation, the following achievements can be reported. 66 beneficiation licenses were issued against a target of 63. We assisted 9 prospective entrepreneurs in the diamond and precious metals industry against a target of 8. And 31 inactive businesses were assisted against a target of 30. We also managed to facilitate 3 skills development initiatives in both sectors against a target of 3 of. So it was also an achievement. So I could say in total we had five missed targets out of 25. In terms of developments within the SADPMR, the board has made a resolution to relocate to new premises. at the GIDZ, Gauteng Industrial Development Zone, which is located at the O.R. Tambo Airport. I should mention that our landlord, the current landlord, is in the process of selling the building where we are located in the near future. So we are required to move. The GIDZ is an initiative of the Gauteng Growth and Growth Development Agency to stimulate economic development in South Africa. It comes with a number of incentives for the industry. Those who are prepared to come and locate their businesses within the jewelry precinct that's going to be established there. Now, their objectives are similar or are more aligned to SABPMR's objectives. Therefore, it will be beneficial for us to move to the GIDZ. In terms of human resources, we have 125 employees in the regulator. During that financial year, we had 125 people. There are those that are with them. You have a copy that says 126. It was just a counting error. If you look at the next slide, it shows number of people with disabilities on the far right. That additional number comes from there. That particular individual is actually a male that is counted on the number of males. So you will see that in senior management and executive, we had 8 males compared to 6 females on the same level. I mean, 4. And then with regards to professional and skilled employees, we had 31 males compared to 50 females. And semi-skilled employees, we have 11 compared to 14 on the female side. And our unskilled employees, we had 2 compared to 2 males compared to 5 unskilled females. And the total for males, we had 52 and 73 for females. Number of appointments made during the year was 11. That was 1 general manager, 1 internal auditor, 1 receptionist, 2 government diamond valuators, 3 government junior government diamond valuators, 1 data capturer, 4 precious metals, 1 bookkeeper, and 1 help desk for administration. In terms of terminations, we had 2 terminations, 1 resignation, and 1 dismissal. That also includes the CFO who resigned during the period. And in terms of internal promotions, we had 2 employees that were promoted. With regards to labor relations, I can report on the verbal warning. We had 3 and written warnings. We had 4 final written warning. We had 1 and dismissals. We had 1. So in total, it was 9. So basically, the nature of the disciplinary actions related to theft, insubordination, and unauthorized leave, as well as late coming. Human resources development. Our internship program for the period, we had 5 interns. We also, of that, it was 2 females and 3 males. And the total number of internal staff on bursaries, we had 17, of which 7 were males and 10 were females. I will now allow Mr. Mwamandlazi to take us through the financial statements.
Thank you, CEO, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, my colleagues. I am pleased to present the annual financial statement of 15-16, which is free from any material errors, as confirmed by the AG. Now, when we're looking at the SADPMR, we budgeted 88.795 million, which of which we budgeted through the Department of Mineral Resources and to the National Treasury. At the end of the, or at the beginning of the financial year, the final allocation was 50,527,000, which left the regulator with a deficit of 38,268. When you're looking now, the budget itself, 56.9% represent the grant or the transfer payment, and we had to generate something like 43.1% within the in-house to cover the shortfall. The budget and the classification of funds were adjusted accordingly with the final allocation and also taking into cognizance what we needed to generate internally. And the SADFM also received National Treasury approval to utilize the accumulated surplus for capital project and other contractual obligations. Revenue that was recognized during 15-16 is 93,090,000,000, which includes the transfer payment as per final allocation from National Treasury of 50,527,000. In all, it means that the grant itself is 54.3% recognized and 43.1% in-house revenue in terms of the percentage. So we, in looking at figures, we generated or we recognized our revenue to an amount of 42,563 as compared to the budget of 38,268. The increase in the in-house revenue is due to the increase in collection of penalties and increase in the sale of services. I'll remind the committee that in 2014 October, we asked National Treasury to review our fee structure, which has never been reviewed for the past or since inception of the SADPMR. In that, we started to see results or fruits of those revised fees. As you can see, the figures or the percentage of our in-house revenue that has been increasing. Another thing that it's owed to is the rate of exchange. During the quarter or during the period under review, it was above 15 rand, the currency. So in that, when we sell our services, most of them we're selling in dollars. So we generated or we had an increase in the recognition of revenue as compared to the estimated exchange rate of 10.7 that was used during the budgeting period. Now coming to the expenditure, if you look overall, the expenditure of the SADPMR has got an average growth rate of about 5.7%. And our actual expenditure for the year under review is 86,800,000,000. Now if you're looking at the top three expenditures or if you're looking at the expenditure trends, the compensation of employees, 64,607, and if you compare most of the grant that we are receiving, we directed to the compensation of employees, then we utilize the in-house generated revenue to augment the shortfall there. Other operating expenditure is 17,555,000,000 rand. Non-cash and abnormal expenditure is 4,638. I'll explain the abnormal expenditure. This is an expenditure whereby when we are faced with certain unforeseen expenditure, we request an approval to utilize our accumulated surplus to fund it. In this particular case, this year, it was the legal fees that we didn't budget for, and we had to defend the mandate of the SADPMR. So we addressed it through that, and in terms of the reporting, we declare or we show that expenditure as an abnormal one. I will say that in terms of the non-cash, in 2014-15, we reassessed our assets. So in that, there was less in terms of depreciation because our asset has been given an extension on the lifespan itself. Insignificant variances were identified when you're looking at the expenditures. And what we did, we've maintained or we've tried to contain our expenditure as directed by the National Treasury cost containment measure. The next slides talk about the challenges that we have if we are looking at the transfer payment versus our budget. If we look just the two comparison of the 2 years, 14 and 15, our budget for 14 was 83,180,000 and the approved budget, and 15 was 88,795,000,000. But when we're looking at the transfer, it was 55,27 for 15-16 and 47,810 for 14-15, and which left us with that deficit. But I am pleased to announce that the SADPMR had made a remarkable improvement when we compared that in 14-15 we reported a deficit of 5 million 5.6 million, but this year we're coming up to report a surplus of 6.291 million rand. So it shows that the implementation of the internal controls as well as the improvements to show that we address the issues that we committed to do are taking place. Lastly, Chair, I just want to talk about our accumulated surplus. Because we have shown a surplus in this, then our accumulated surplus as well has increased from the 43,298 to 49,589. And I'll also remind again the committee that in 2011-12, we requested National Treasury saying that, seeing that there's a challenges to getting the approved budget, we request that we utilize our accumulated surplus to fund for capital assets and capital projects. In that, we are still using our accumulated surplus to fund for capital projects as well as abnormal expenditure. Thank you. I'll hand over to the Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Mandan. Chair, in terms of our challenges and interventions, there has been a significant decline in the beneficiation of diamonds in the industry, within that period in particular, and our technical committee of the board has actually instructed us to look into to do some investigations on that. And funding of HDSA remains a challenge, and we have planned to intensify our relationship with funding entities of government to assist. National Treasury has also indicated or asked us to cut our projected budget. So we have projected for the eventuality and have planned to intensify our cost-cutting measures. Access to market for polished diamonds by small beneficiaries is limited, and we are facilitating polished diamond tenders as well as access to markets, just to try and promote and assist them to access the market. I think we have come to the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions first on the diamond trader? If, as we ask the diamond trader, there is a matter that is overlapping, we will deal with that issue. But now we are dealing with questions of the diamond trader. Honorable Schmidt. If Nkosi Mandela doesn't ask on the state diamond trader, then we're not going to allow him to ask on the regulator. Because he never declared his interest.
I have an interest.
Yeah, Nkosi Kazi also my TG, where's your boss, my boy? Okay. Honorable Schmidt, yes, yeah, also promise I am God. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. First is, it struck me while we were sitting here, Ms. Futhi Zikalala is the CEO for the State Diamond Trader, but she sits on the board for the regulator. Is there no potential conflict of interest? I'm asking because I haven't given it proper thought, but that just crossed my mind for the moment. The second issue is, you know what my view is about the State Diamond Trader.
All what I can tell you, those are the issues one was raising to say we rather leave them, which it's almost a common practice. But yeah. I'm not saying she's gonna answer.
But the second issue is the State Diamond Trader, the effectiveness of it is basically borne out by slide number 22. If you have a look at slide number 22, It says state diamond trader sales by client segment. And when you start off, you say you've got 47 clients. You've got four segments. And the one segment says growth and transformation. And there are three clients with a total, I believe, 7,542 carats sold, which on average was probably, I guess now, about 2,500 carats per client in that category, roughly speaking. I'm just giving an average. You look at the next category or segment, it's equitable access to 20 clients at an average of 10 carats per client. If you look at the next segment, it's niche and large and medium B, 19 clients with a caratage of about 4 per client. I'm just giving you averages. The other is 5, and 64 carats is about 12 carats, roughly. But what does worry me is the first category. We have growth and transformation, 3 clients, 7,500 at an average of 2,500 carats, which consists 9% of the total value of sales by state diamond trade. So the equitable access is 20 clients, but that only consists of 1% of the sales. And then you have the niche and large medium B, which if I understand your footnote means they are non-HDSA companies. So I would like to know if the purpose of the age of the state diamond trader is to promote equitable access. It does, it fails so miserably because three clients get 9% of the sale, 20 clients get 1%, and that's where it stops. So what is the purpose of the state diamond trader except to have more employed people? But there is no purpose under this blue sky, except you can tell me something else, for the state diamond trader to exist. I'm till today, after 9 years, I'm still trying to establish what the purpose of the state diamond trader is when three clients get 9% of the value of the sales. Three. After 9 years. After 9 years, you've got 20 clients, you get 10 carats on average. 10 carats per average. It's a shocking indication, indictment on state diamond trade, no matter how we look at it. Forget about whether the diamond sales have increased in the global economic position. I'm looking only at this graph. Maybe I'm not reading it correctly. Maybe I'm missing the point. Maybe I've got it totally wrong. But it's those three clients and the 20 clients that worry me. Thank you very much. What's the chair?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to get it clarity maybe on page 23, on the two graphs, the 2015-16 and 2014-15. What is the difference there? Because when we look at the income, the other one is more than the other one, or the graph is lower than the other one. Just want to know that. I want to also to know the issue that Manasse. They said she resigned in October 2015. But on the last page, also on the report, she's a member. Maybe she was reinstated. I don't know. Thank you.
Honorable Mandel.
Well, sister, I must be upfront, honorable member, Osla, somewhat forced me into this one, but the committee, Mamu Boas, of Nega, they must protect me in this class. There's Honorable Pekinini, a proud team, but is not called to ask a question. Let me, Chair, perhaps ask the things that are unsettling me. And I was hoping that, firstly, Mamte, Oscars was about on slide number 11, you talk of a panel of men. I would therefore want to inquire on the lady there, tucked away in the corner, happens to be what then exactly? The lady tucked in the corner happened to be who and what role is she performing in the Diamond Indaba, but also how accessible is this Diamond Indaba to women, people with disabilities, as well as young people. Often it has been said that these Indabas are often away and not reachable and accessible to our young people. So what form of accessibility or media do you use to ensure that you are able to reach young people? I know Honorable Matlala likes the issue of billboards, but where I come from, there's not a single billboard. But I therefore want to understand people located in rural communities that don't have access to billboards, and they have an interest in attending such indabas and also getting involved in diamond trade. How accessible are these platforms to them, and how are you able to ensure that they are able to be reached? You speak of about the Young Diamond Beneficiators Guild. How many people has it been able to recruit in terms of young people? Also, can you elaborate on young women and men? How many you've been able to bring on board? How successful is this Hong Kong National Pavilion? I mean, sometimes a lot of people embark on these trips and it's really an outing and a holiday. What measures are in place to ensure that you are able to do an assessment of the impact it has had on these participants and companies? But I also share the same, Honorable Chair, with Honorable Advocate Smith here, on the figures that have been illustrated on the State Diamond Traders sales in carats, particularly the growth and transformation. It says number of clients, 3 there, which equate to 9%. What strategies are in place to ensure that the growth and transformation of that can at least in the next fiscal seem to grow from 9% to a target of 30% if it were what we want to see as a committee, what your vision is in terms of growth patterns there? Are we forever going to be remaining at 3% as alluded to by Honorable Smith, that for 9 years this has been the case? But I'm also interested in terms of how do you monitor and also ensure that it is not just a handful of people that are playing a dominant role in gaining access to the state diamond traders' diamonds. How open and wide is your pool? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay. No. That was the
Honorable Schmidt. I was looking, except that he's no longer there. The former CEO of the, I don't know whether it was a board of cross-pollination, the former CEO of the regulator was a board member of the State Diamond Trade. It's just one example that I've picked up. But besides that, my cousin. I can wait. I can see all of you. You like this thing. If a person likes power, I know it's for consumption purposes, but maybe it's another issue to get clarity. Where does the CEO fit in the scheme of things? It seems to be more featuring as part of the board. I know it's for purposes of reporting. One thing that I think is worrisome, and again, Mabum, it might be coming to you, is that when I look for my dear friend, I don't know. First, what is the measurement of the relevance and performance of a member of a board? Where do you see in your annual report, Ms. S. Numan has been permanently and perpetually absent. What is the measurement? You know, in our own traditional meetings, there is something that says, if you are not attended three consecutive meetings without a valid reason, maybe in anonymity, you cease to be a member of that structure. Now, here you get appointed to be a board member, it might be wrong, it says absent. In fact, from January 2015, it's supposed to be January 2016. Am I correct in your annual report? Because it says April 2015, May 2015, July 2015, October 2015, then January 2015. I think 2016. That person has never attended a single board meeting in the records. What then becomes the status of this person? I don't know, maybe you'll explain Manasseh. Then, the point I was saying, Babum says is coming to you. It might be related to you. Like, aren't you overloading? I could see Mr. Mabuza, Uvela, in almost all of them. And that's a DDG who's expected to be driving there. But at the same time, note what I said initially, that once you send, probably a much junior person may not assist. Don't you think we should look on the, so for effect, for efficient boards, my understanding is that person when he's there is a representative mostly of the department, therefore will assist when people take decision to say this one, and be a conveyor belt to say, the board, for an example, to resolve on this issue, and therefore it has to happen. By the time something officials and in the normal meetings, this person can share. But looking, I don't think on Mr. Mabuza wishes not to be in the meeting. But the viability of that option, maybe if for someone who would know Mr. Mabuza from a department, will just say, hey, but this man here love. But the reality is that with the strategic location of the person in the department, it might be very difficult for him. In fact, I would go and say, maybe they are supposed to account to him below, beside the issue of the DG, but they are he's supposed to be more of an authority. Now, I would say maybe if you want to relook on those things, maybe it's one issue that we need to look at, whether structurally is a correct arrangement.
lishinte mama umvelase lena mina ngifuna nje ukuba straightforward. Although there is a problem, it doesn't sound good that when it's a woman still is a chairman. We must calm this thing. Although others are even contesting the chairperson, that's why I usually say chair, because the chairperson still has got son, which is a connotation of a male. You see, but it's worse when you say chairman, and you come across a woman. So I think to me that is the issue. Those may sound small things. We're talking in confidence, but also we're trying to assist. Not that we're hiding. Sometimes the auditing rules, they just change out of the blue. You get charged not on the basis of performance and everything. You just get charged on the structural arrangement. To say, because of this, like what the honorable member was raising, where there is not a conflict when someone is a, especially in the level of an accounting officer this side, now comes this side. Can you imagine if you're good? I'm not saying that's the case. Can you imagine if you're contesting the space together? I'm not saying it's happening. If you're contesting, you are a CEO, you want to get the attention of the department. I'm a CEO, I want to get the attention of the department. You want to push some, it does some, depending on the personalities. So the risk might be very high to place people who are at the same level. Then you say, I must account to you, but I'm a CEO myself where I come from. I'm just saying that issue, that situation at some point might be very untenable. But I think it's a matter that we'll have to deal with. So I thought those for me were some of the small issues.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think that the first question from Honorable Schmidt on the conflict, potential conflict of interest, I would rather answer it this way, that the law was passed in this house, and it was like that when it was passed, and we are implementing. And so, but it has been working. For us, we have not really seen a conflict of interest, because Chair, to bring one point that you know was raised earlier on, I can't remember which of our colleagues who of our colleagues was presenting at the time, the issue of the seniority of members, you know, from the department who sit on our board, that at some point we've got to find a happy medium. Sitting there as the CEO and then having an assistant director sitting in the board is a challenge on its own. But then having another CEO, you are taken to be on the same level. Isn't it a better evil than the other? You know, but obviously when I'm in the board of the regulator, I do get respect from the CEO of the regulator. And when he is in my board, as my board member, I give him the respect that he deserves, because he is my board member at that point in time. It's something that maybe requires maturity, but it's also just out there as something that you need to do as a board member. This is how you behave. As a CEO, this is how you behave. And if you fail to do that and fail to accord respect where it's supposed to go, then you don't even deserve your own position. This is how I look at it, and in according the former CEO, the respect that I had to, there was no pain even in my heart doing it. It was just something that had to be because he was my board member. So there are those tensions that I don't even think that Mr. Mzize or even the minister can say easily the answer is what, because seriously, sometimes sitting with really junior officials in a board does cause problems, because their level of development has not come to the level of what you're expecting. But it also depends on the level again. So it's something that maybe Mr. the DG is still thinking about. Maybe he's going to augment my response. The second question from Mr. the Honorable Schmidt. Honorable Schmidt, you know, sometimes I used to say to people who would say, but why does the industry hate the trader so much? I would say to them, they didn't hate us. They just didn't know how to like us, you know. They needed to be taught how to like us. I'm not suggesting that you hate us, because you don't. You've said that we should be aborted, and we spoke about that, because we have a role to play. And I'll explain this role around the GST, particularly as the one example. One of our outcomes is that of creating large-scale black-owned companies in this country, as well as white-owned companies from this country, large-scale. Because all of the big companies that we have in this country, in the sector, are not South African companies. We have a duty to do something about it. And this is, you know, one of the attempts from this small organization, that we need to see the people that to look at the people, the companies that are promising and they are buying, they are active, and you can see that they want to develop and you assist with their development. And then say, this is what we're going to do. So there's a specific project around the growth and transformation where they report to us quarterly, and we report to the board quarterly on them as well, their performance overall. Because we want to get from them these large-scale South African-owned companies from our own clients even. There's a lot that's happening for them, apart from them also being members of the guild, and we're in the forefront of starting the guild and assisting other members. Even De Beers has recognized their potential. They started a project where they selected five, I'm sure that you could have read somewhere where they were launching. All of those five project members are clients of the trader, and all three, all, you know, our G&T clients are in there as well. So we are trying, and this thing has got little to do with really black companies only. It's got South African companies, because you see, when a company comes from outside the country, like the one that recently closed its doors, Lotosi, when it suits them, and when Hong Kong sneezes, they just shut down and close a factory that employs, two factories that employed in total about 400 people. Shut, got on the plane, went back home. We cannot afford not to have companies that are, you know, large enough to hold this industry, to give it some anchorage. We need to do this. So this is one of the ways that we're doing this. Now, coming to the numbers, that there are only three. They bought 9%, the sales to them were 9%. This is a targeted thing, and we want to do it, and we're going to continue. At the end of the year, we had to do a second tier of this G&T segment, and that is now. And so we've done that, and we are seeing how these other three that are coming along, what is going to happen with them by the year end and beyond that. So I think that we do need some time to keep on working on these solutions that we see on a daily basis, that we need to provide some solutions to our industry. And the equitable access, that is, yes, 1%. But equitable access, what we have sold to them, this is the group that is giving us one of the harder times, you know, when we then select from them and say equitable access. It's not just black people. This is a group where you have your, you know, they're small enough to have employees under 10, etc. And so, but we still want them to grow. And others are not here to grow. They are old people who are here to just do this work and carry on. They're not in that growth mode. And this is where we experience also quite a number of challenges around your tax clearance certificates, and we stop selling to them because if you don't have it, we really do suspend you on the spot. We can't trade with you. So there are challenges, and it's not as clear, it's not as it just seems. It's just a daily struggle of working with these people and saying these companies, they need to grow, we need to expose them, we need to invite them, talk to them, what is going on there. So I think that it is, with due respect to you, Honorable Schmidt, it's unkind, you know, for us to be here and to be putting so much effort into this project of government, which was started under a law that was approved here. And now 8 years down the line, to have the words such as there is no purpose for it, it really is unkind. I'm not asking you to be kind, but I'm just saying it's unkind. Maybe we can find other ways of defining the state diamond trader if we don't, you know. But I know you like us.
I like you. I'm not sure I like the state diamond trader.
Honorable Nyambi, slide 23. I think that those numbers, as you can see, 23 and 24, and the teal color that is there, it's really about the actual numbers, the 24 and the 23. Otherwise, the actual amounts that were sold are just written there. They're not there, if I've cleared that one up. Yes. That bluish teal color there. That this is why the one is slightly higher, because of 24 and the other one is 23. About board member Manasseh, the term of the board initially ended in September last year. And so she had already decided not to come back. And so when the minister requested them to stay on, she was no longer available. That's the only reason that she left. I think I would rather talk about Ms. Nxumalo as well at the same time. Ms. Nxumalo is also a state employee in a way, because she works for the COJ, City of Johannesburg. I think it's a timing thing that, you know, she just cannot find the time. But I do want to say something, Jefferson, about her, that she attended most of the audit committee meetings where she sat as well. So I guess it was just the timing thing that she can't, you know, give us time 2 days in a month. But she certainly did give us some contribution in terms now of her performance at the audit committee. She was actively there, and so she, you know, we really did get that support and that guidance from her. But this does not take away the fact that she has absent when it comes to the board issue. So that's an issue. And I want to also say, Jefferson, it has been difficult, you know, to get, you know, all the members in, because the year of extension, people had other things that they had planned, but they did accept the minister's request and they came and supported, but it's just been difficult to plan certain things. But having said that, we do have a new board, and its term started on the 1st of September this year for another 3 years. So we are already moving, you know, in that, on that one. Minister has given us a new board already. Honorable Mandela Babosekai. On slide 11, I Honorable Mandela, because you were able to see the lady the way that she just appeared. Just the legs. Honorable Mandela, she was the facilitator and the program director. That was her role. her name is Nosi Kombanjwa.
Content
to get to the second point that you raised, Honorable Mandela, how accessible is this Diamond Indaba to women, people with disabilities, and youth? We use quite a number of media platforms to advertise, but I must say that the one of 2015 was more higher level. While we did go to the media and we talked about the Diamond Indaba, it was not as much as we did this year for the second one. But we also went back to the provinces where we had already done some work, like Limpopo, Northern Cape, and we actually invited the MECs for Economic Development and asked them, their departments, to assist with bringing young people from those provinces. We have not really managed to go to the other province. I think KZN also did bring young people, but not the Eastern Cape and the other provinces, and we're still going to get there. But this year we did go out to the media and TV and radio stations that are listened to by young people. I'm hoping that they were able to get the information. But we had quite a lot of young people participating and outside of the industry, from outside the industry, which was really quite interesting. The enterprise development one, we currently have 18 young people now, but at the end of the financial year, we had 8. These young people are coming from all over the country. Each time we go out on a provincial promotional activity and we talk about the diamond industry and the trader and our work, we then invite people and we say, young people, you must send us your CVs. We want to see what we can help you with, those who are interested in taking up opportunities within the diamond space. So we conduct these interviews not only on our own, but together with the industry partners that have partnered with us on this, and when we do the selection. So it's young people from all over the country, if that answers. And I think that we have a spread of almost 50-50 at the moment in terms of men and women, but I just need to check on that one. I will definitely check on that. The Hong Kong shows and other, particularly international shows, and the measuring of impact and successfulness of these. I think this is why we decided that we needed to come up with a benchmarking tool and say you can't just get money from the state and be supported to go to Hong Kong and be in a pavilion that has been paid for by government, and yet we don't see you growing and getting anywhere. So we do quite, now that we have this tool and we go back to them and we say, now, have you got any repeat signs that you see? Any more new networks that you've created? And we ask all of these questions, and in time we will have a full report once we've completed, implementing, or we go ahead with implementation of the tool. I think, and also in terms of development for the growth and transformation, I think I've touched on that, and that they are in the guild and they participate in the shows, and they are also part of the new project by De Beers, and there's a lot that they're active about and around, and are quite developing their skills and businesses in the process. I think, Chairperson, there is an issue about CEOs and boards, and I think that's a corporate government governance issue, and I think the DG might want to think about it, and but I think we're doing well. Thank you.
Okay.
Provinces? No, thank you, Slade and honourable members. I think we fully agree. I think relatively we, as the DMR family, by family, I'm referring to the portfolio, but principal department in the portfolio. I think we've strived our level best to improve on the challenges, and I think that has also been reflected in the presentations the past 2 days. I think, but what is very important, and I intentionally mentioned the issue of the family, is we will continue to strive to refine and instill a particular culture of dealing with issues and also highlighting issues accordingly as well. And we intentionally also, you know, allow the family members to participate. In fact, we recently had a stress session where we've engaged on, say, in terms of the government mandate, not only departmental mandate, but government mandate, where are we going? And how does the department, as a family, ensure that that mandate is achieved? So it's very important that we continue on that path as the DMR family. And we've heard the issues that the Chairperson has raised, including on the issue of appointments, and Ufuthi was correct as well by highlighting the fact that it's important that the issue, the issue of respect and maturity, we elevate it, because not only the board is not only government officials that sit there, and mind you, we believe that the people that we have put in government to participate in some of the in the boards are competent people, you know. And in some of the boards, you'll also see that there's union people which are in those boards, and there might be community representatives in those in those boards. However, it's very important that we try and deal with that issue of maturity and respect as well, you know, because we strive to appoint the relevant people to deal with it. But I think one thing that Chairperson also have said earlier on is the fact that government is striving to look at this issue of governance through that process that I've highlighted. They're looking at the issue of the appointments and also the issues of the qualifications. And I think at an appropriate time, then the outcome of that work probably will come through to the PPC. And we've heard in Davaga, Mr. Mahuza as well, in fact, with the revised nominations to especially the boards of the, I think the trader or the regulator is not part of it as well because of the issue of the load that the Chairperson has clearly highlighted. I think it's for us lastly, to continue, Chairperson, to work together with our state entities, and with that understanding that there's one mandate, which is a government mandate, and the department is just a conduit to achieve that mandate, and how we communicate some of the milestones that we have achieved here in Parliament, because we are here to account as well. It's very, very important. And also, how do we also engage ourselves as a family moving forward and refine the challenges that we're facing is very, very important. And I think lastly for myself, Chairperson and honourable members, I think the two-day session has helped a lot. And what has also helped a lot is not only, I think it's the first time that we're having all the
the family members to the end of the presentation. Because some previously you have, let's say DMR present and people will go. Mintech presents and people will go. But I think it helps. Because there's work, you can see that there's areas that we work together in, like Mintech and also probably CGS. You know, you can look at that. And my colleagues from the DMR, I'm sure they've seen things that they will not have. So I think we'll continue refining these areas, Chairperson. I think the main objective is we have to ensure that we achieve the main mandate of government through our department. But the issues that were raised by honourable members and Chairperson, we take them to heart and we'll try and deal with them. Thank you.
Okay. People don't say I suppress them on the regulator.
No, we are satisfied.
Look, let me say this. Thank you very much. You know, there's only one thing that I know. When you work and when you do things, if you enjoy it, it actually means there's something wrong that you are not doing. We grow for different reasons and on different expectations. Once you don't grow, and I always tell people this thing, never go to a meeting and tell someone what he or she wants to hear. They say the best of friend is not the one who makes you smile in front of her or him, and then behind your back is frowning at you. The mere fact that we have gone up to this level, but also, let me say this to your team, Baboon Silva, because you are here. One of the things you must know, sometimes these processes, we may deny it and not say it in front of you, sometimes these processes are an educational exercise, even to members of the committee, that the risk and the danger is when people fear to raise issues because, but Lomonde Daibosa, we are born as an Agutia Peta. And then the person to say, I won't ask this question because it might mean this thing. The danger which is that we are not given knowledge. No, it's my phone. It's not given knowledge. Now you can switch it off. It's not giving knowledge. So it's very important that, by and by, it's very important that whatever we do, one thing, one person, a comrade of mine, once said, one miss is too popular. One said, when the deployments were being done, he said, no, I'm not going there where there's going to be so-and-so, then gets introduced. And then I get introduced, and then I must stand up and say, Mandla, you see. Says, no, I want to go where I'm going to speak and not accompany others when they go. And so part of the learning is that sometimes there might be people who just go somewhere in order to speak and not learn. But it's very important that after every exercise, there must be something that you said, I've learned something. But obviously, that is also informed that in the nature, see, if your parents would have said to you, no, forget about it, go and do this, truth be told, that you won't be here, most of you. But the more, when you are grilled, it also helps to open up to say, no, now I need to think much broader than I thought I could think. But it also relieves you because it limits the responsibility of thinking and opens up the scope for others to assist you. So what I think is important is that in whatever we do, we must understand that we have a duty and we have a responsibility. It's nice when you sit, Caesar and others and your team, it's nice when we sit here. The risk that we can do is to forget what is it that is an expectation from us by the nation? And think that what you are doing it just for your corner. Now, the issues, for instance, that you've raised, I can tell you now, my mind always works, is that maybe at times we do take resolutions and decisions without understanding its long-term implications. We will look into some of those issues, even ourselves, and say, for instance, when you were saying, no, this was passed here as the legislation. I understand the nature of establishing an entity that requires a legislation. But the format, if then the format was agreed here, it then says we'll have to apply maximum thinking in whatever we do. On the issue that Honorable Schmidt had raised, I agree with regards to the issue of the state diamond, but we've got a view that we expressed as a committee. Remember when we're dealing with the MPRDA and the proposal of an independent body that will process blah, 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 blah. Don't remember what they were saying. One of the issues we said was that rather than to look at increasing the structure, we will have to come back, discuss whether the format of entities and so forth that we are having, are they serving the purpose? So that we don't single out one amongst others. For an example, we have a different view whether you needed to make a separation of state diamond trader and the regulator, or you would have needed to have one entity with different chambers. I'm just making an example. So that discussion for me, and unfortunately it will be difficult for the officials for one reason. It's us who establish. They just fit in on a system that has been done. So to form a soccer club, it might be difficult to say whether you needed to have this team or not. The coach of the team can only coach as much as the team is available. Immediately the owner says, I'm selling the team, I'm dismantling the team, there is no place for the coach. So I think we must, at some point, even ourselves as members of the portfolio committee, we must take responsibility and say this issue. So when we deal with the report, I think let's agree, when we're dealing with the report, we must then express views. What do we think has to happen on the basis of the reports that we're given? But most critically, then, in closing, so that you live with a good heart, I appreciate the level of knowledge. No, I'll be honest, sometimes in other areas, when people answer questions, you can see. There's cause of talk, tell us this fool. We are pumping. But you can see, good day, I recall, no, IAEO, oh, about Jambek. So the knowledge is very critical. So that when you explain to a person, take that person as if knows nothing to a level probably of a child who's entering school. So that person understands. So I would say you have done that. But more than any other thing, the reason sometimes you get beaten up, not physically or whatever, it's simple because to be honest, when it comes to the management of affairs, I can say it without any doubt. You are one of the best examples of what we are asking. You may have all your weaknesses, others are hidden, we don't see. But when it comes on what is expected of you, and with what we have experienced in other areas. In fact, if there is only one worry, I always ask myself, if I were to be changed, I'm sure all the members here, you're to be changed in other committees, you know what that now, there I must carry this screen and because you are going for headaches. We are doing it because we don't want you to lower the guard. Because all what can happen if we continuously praise you is complacency will creep in and then we'll find ourselves going back. So don't think that we don't appreciate what you are doing. You are doing a very excellent job. It's just that we are jealous because we don't want to go back and debate non-issues now, situations that are worse. And then somebody asks and they say, no, it's because they were performing well. It's because we want you to perform well and we want those who have not reached a particular stage to go there to that stage. And those who have reached a higher level Don't just go there and celebrate clean audit, but they must know, as they celebrate a clean, you know the problem with football clubs are that if it wins a championship or a particular, or a cup or this one, then they play the next match, a league match, then they get beaten up. Because they were busy celebrating a victory of a cup and forget that there is a match that is coming. So as you celebrate, be ready that there is another matter, because it may come when you bring in your quarterly report, you may discover something. So as you celebrate, be ready for the next task, that this is what is going to make me. So on that score, thank you very much, Honorable Smith.
Mr. Chair, just on a light-hearted note, now that you've made your speech, where was it that you said we were going to get our disciplines from?
I don't know. We will wait for those precious metals, Mahmoud Galala, you promised. If you want us to go direct, Honorable Smith and Lorima, don't go there first because you are closer. Thank you very much.